I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hey, guys.
Hi, how are you guys?
How are you doing on this very lovely Tuesday?
And how excited are you for Thanksgiving?
I know. Some?
Kind of?
Guys, none? Getting together with family. Do you have a long drive? Did you guys save this episode for you the guys. Family drive to Thanksgiving? And this is your introduction to your favorite true crime podcast to your family?
That Welcome. Is so cute. Hello.
Hi. We hope you stick around, you little stinker.
I know. What are you having? What's your favorite Thanksgiving food? What do you hate?
I'm not into the turkey. I gotta say, it's not my favorite.
I'm a world-renowned stuffing hater.
I know. We know that about you.
It's just the texture is bad. Don't give me wet bread. I don't want that.
Some people love wet bread. Grow up.
And you know what? That's fine for them. They get more, actually, because I don't want it. But I honestly feel guilty about it, because then everyone's like, try mine. Try my Nona's. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. It doesn't matter. It's what it is. It's not who made it.
See, you know, I'm like that with gravy, because they're like, well, you got to have the gravy. No, I don't.
No, you know what? I actually don't.
Leave my mashed potatoes alone. If you put gravy on them, I will scoop the parts with the gravy on it off, and I will eat what's underneath.
Thank you so much.
Like a civilized woman.
I like gravy on mashed potatoes, but that's about it. And the only time I have it is when I'm at somebody else's Thanksgiving who's prepared it, because I won't have it on anything else. So I'm not going to make it.
I don't get the appeal. I love the other people. I'm a great date to have around if you love you the are. Gravy, because I'm going to leave it all to you, baby. You got it.
I'll put some on a second plate and then I'll give you that plate.
Yeah. I also have the palate of like an 8-year-old boy. So like if it's not dino nugs and mashed potatoes, like, fighting, like my plate looks like a disaster afterwards. Like I can never just eat everything. I make a mess.
It is funny.
It's distracting.
We'll like go out for burritos or Mexican nearby, and every time you're like, how do you do that? Like your plate's clean.
I know. And then like my husband eats, and I swear you could just reuse the plate. Like it's so
clean.
Oh
yeah, no, he inhales.
And
he's a vacuum.
You can just kind of tell which one's mine, because it's always just a fucking mess. So I don't know what that says about me. I am what I am. Excuse
me.
I am what I am.
Oh,
Thanksgiving joke.
Thanks,
you.
Dad.
Welcome. You're rubbing off on me.
I sure am. And you know what? You're welcome.
I wouldn't change a goddamn thing.
Okay, so we have Thanksgiving coming up here in the States. I know not everybody lives here with us. We have quite a big table here. So if you're not doing Thanksgiving this week, what are you doing? When is your Thanksgiving if you have one? What's that like?
What's going on? What do you eat?
I know. What are the vibes from other places on American Thanksgiving? I don't even know.
Would you get together and have like a turkey, gravy, stuffing, mashed potatoes, green bean casserole, cranberry sauce kind of night?
I did have a Worksgiving today.
It's very
and
cute.
And we had trivia and my team won.
Okay, snaps for apples.
I know, thank you. I never win trivia. I'm really good at talking smack. I'm really bad at following up. So I'm glad I had a good team to do the follow up for me.
There you go.
If you ever need a good one, I like to stop in the middle of somebody talking and just go, oh my God. Wait, no, do you hear that? No, do you hear that? I think that's the sound of a major comeback. That's so funny. It's calling my name.
Oh, I'd flick your nose if we were on different teams. But then I'd kiss it afterwards to give you a little boop.
Yeah, because you heard it. Ouch.
Yeah.
But Thanksgiving aside, you know what we found out and we're very thankful for? We just hit our 200th episode last week.
And we completely forgot to acknowledge it. So happy 201.
A new era, truly. We're in our 200s.
We are.
Which is insane, because it's only taken us a little bit of time to get here.
Yeah, like 3 years.
Well. Yeah, it didn't take us terribly long. I thought it would take a lot longer.
I feel like we blinked.
Yeah, we did. I felt like 100 was a really big deal. And we were like, oh my God, we get to it. And then we were like, yeah, we just got to keep chugging. Oh, two, cool. And
I know.
And then we were like, oh my God, wait, two.
I know. And you guys are still here.
Oh, we love you. Thank you for being here.
We're very thankful for you.
We are. And we love having you at our ATFTC table. And let's see, for our fake made up Thanksgiving with all of you, I'll be bringing a heavy dose of a multi-part series.
I'm so excited for this. I'll bring some yummy snacks.
Yum.
And I'm very excited for this series because, guys, I cheated. I shouldn't have, but I did, and I just have to come clean. I know the case that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
And it's devastating, but I'm excited for an Abby deep dive because I just need a hyper fixation deep dive, especially this time of year. I'm wrapping gifts. I'm decorating. I'm doing all that good. I just need her in my head.
Yep. I love it. And you know what? To be honest with you guys, I was a real optimist at first. And I was like, it shouldn't be more than two parts. Well, that's a fucking lie. It'll probably be three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really going to try everything in my being to white knuckle it to three and not do four. The problem is, you see, I've done a lot of research on this case. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of details. And sometimes it's picking out which details are important to include and which ones are simply details that don't really add much substantial to it. But I know because between you and me, I've seen and listened to and heard between podcasts, documentaries, and an audiobook over 20 hours. And that's just the hearing. That's not even the research on the back end with all of our news sources and all of the journalism and stuff like that. So I am like exploding with information on this case. And I'm so excited.
Why I do not think you should hold back. I love a long, deep. I mean, I'm not saying pull a John Bonet.
I was going to say you should really careful what you wish for. I can do eight parts easy.
Watch me. But if you've got enough for four, I think. Well, I'll let our listeners decide. Let us know in the notes below.
Too many parts for you guys?
Yeah, right?
No offense taken, truly, because I just get into a deep research hole and then the editing and the curating and the writing creating part of this is like deciding what is insignificant, like a yellow bikini, and what is super significant, like this one text on this one day kind of thing. But you know, because he clicked it. Allie doesn't because she didn't. Allie does, but she didn't click on it. Today we're talking about Shanann and Chris Watts.
Bum, bum, bum.
So just really quick, yoo-hoo, pod's on. If you weren't here already, we hope you are.
Hey.
But hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
That's us.
Before we hop into it all the way, I just want to give you a little background because I started this case literally just because I read Gone Girl this year.
You just read Gone Girl?
I did. I've seen it. I know the story, but I had never read the book.
Okay.
So I was like, I'm going to get in on this.
What a good book.
And it's phenomenal. It's great. It's another Gillian Flynn classic. But I was reading it, and the whole time I was reading it, it's like split into a couple sections. It's well over 10 years old now, so I'm not going to worry about spoiler alerts, but I hate spoiler alerts, so I'm not going to spoil it for you. The first section and the first setup of this book reminded me nonstop of this case specifically.
Really?
It did. Because
totally different ending.
Very different ending, absolutely, but the first part did.
Mm-hmm.
But like, set up an introduction to everything going on. Because the reaction of the partner, the intentions laid out again at the beginning from the victim, and even some of the twists just kept this specific case like ricocheting in my head. And while it's a known case, it will certainly be, again, probably three parts. I will try to keep it reasonable. But I wanted to share this with you for a few reasons. One, if you like this and haven't read Gone Girl yet, girl, get going and read it because it's good. And it might remind you of this.
Gillian Flynn, sponsor us.
Please. I literally only shout your praises. But two, because I think that it's a great comparison to understand the levels going on in this case. If there's anything a fictional crime book has in common with a real life case like this, it's just the layers and layers of deception and tall tales and hidden moments and projecting what you want other people to see. Before we get into it, I just, again, want to give that heads up. I haven't ingested an insane amount of media and time researching this, and I likely won't be able to stop myself from listening to more than the 20 hours I already have. In the meantime, I already have another book that I kind of want to read on it. But for sources, I just wanted to shout out The Perfect Father by John Glatt, which is a great book on this. Phenomenally detailed and just really black and white, like here's all the details in order.
Mm-hmm.
I also found a lot of help from Murder with My Husband and Love, Marry, Kill. Both did a series on this, which I loved. And I found a lot, like a ton of news sources linked. We have biography.com, The Times, The New York Times, People, and more. You can see them all. They will absolutely be linked in a Google Doc because there is no chance in hell that's coming in at less than 4,000 characters.
No.
And for trigger warnings, boy, there's a lot. In this whole series, we're going to talk about a ton of things, including familicide, the murder of children, a deteriorating marriage, image and weight, potential illnesses like potential psychopathy or narcissistic personality disorder, and other potential musings. But it's a lot, and we'll get into it, and I'll try to give you a heads up whenever I can. But just know that it's today isn't too bad. We're doing like a lot of the setup, and then it's going to get like really bad really fast for the rest of the time after that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into it. While many people know this case, it is still very much my due diligence to review it in its entirety. So let me set the scene. Okay. It's summer of 2010, where we start.
I forgot it was that long ago.
It's California Girls by Katy Perry, Baby by Justin Bieber, and Rolling in the Deep by Adele are freaking everywhere.
Yep.
Okay. Twilight's Eclipse and Harry Potter's Deathly Hallows Part 1, both at theaters this year.
I saw both of them.
Yeah, you did.
I saw both of them in theaters.
Angry Bird was on everyone's phone.
Yes, it was.
And one of my favorite pop culture events of all time, Taylor Swift's first Grammy, and Kanye West actually interrupting that first Grammy to say, I'm gonna let you finish, but Beyonce's was better.
The gall
of
that man.
And listen, was it rude? Absolutely. But
will we remember it forever? Beyonce.
Yeah. Like, was he wrong? It's Beyonce. I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm asking the real questions.
Nah, he was wrong.
He was wrong to do it that way.
It's nasty.
But other things you can remember might be an infinity scarf everywhere you look, a skinny jeans, or maybe. Just maybe. At any store or classroom you might walk into, finding a Cookie Monster or an I Heart Boobies rubber bracelet on everyone's wrists.
100%
of I'm really the time. Bringing you back.
Yes, yes. I'm seeing Hot Topic. I'm seeing my Paramore shirt. I'm seeing.
Yes.
I'm seeing the little side poof I had in my hair with a little clip.
Oh, the bumpets.
I'm seeing my layered Hollister. Way too expensive tank tops. I'm seeing it all, and I'm uncomfortable.
And we lived through that, and we, you know what, innovated out of that. And I'm just gonna give a little cheers for us to get through it. You know,
these young kids did not have the blue eyeshadow days, and it shows.
Oh, truly. I miss the blue eyeshadow days. Anyway, it's in this world. While Facebook is still reaching its first 500 million users, which, by the way, is nothing compared to today, that Shanann Rusick received a Facebook friend request from Christopher Watts, who goes by Chris, while they were both in North Carolina with their families.
Okay, so they both live in North Carolina?
At this point, yes. Okay. I believe Shanann actually was born in New Jersey, and then they moved there, but they're both there. And I think she had a connection with Chris's cousin who was like, oh, you should talk to Shanann because she had just gotten out of a rocky divorce with a man she married straight out of high school. She's only like 25 or 26. Mm-hmm. And so she's kind of down on herself, right? Like just hoping things will look up. And she gets this friend request and she's like, ah, whatever. Like I'll friend him. It's Facebook. I'm not going to meet him anyway. Well, surprise, surprise, because the world is small and they sure did meet. Chris, on the other hand, was just getting out of his first very serious relationship, which with someone who turned out to be using him as a rebound. Boo.
Not fun.
No. And he was also kind of feeling down and out. So when his cousin suggested it, he was like, yeah, I'll do that, actually. Shanann said initially, again, she accepted because she was like, it's not like I'll ever meet him. But the two did. I think they actually met at a wedding.
Oh.
Which is really sweet. I could be making that up, but with everything I've ingested, that's the only way I remember people saying that they met.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at least at some function or event. But how cute.
Yeah.
Like they did meet and she was like, okay, maybe I should give him a chance. Like maybe we can go out on a date or something. And so, while it took a message or two, and then on top of that, even a date or two, the two eventually found comfort and love in each other. And I have to be honest, this was honestly like the cutest first meeting you could ever think of. Like, he took her to, I think it was a movie or like a movie theater, and it ended up being a theater, or it was a high-end movie theater for something. But he showed up in like jeans and a t-shirt or something, and there's like a doorman opening the door in a tux, and he was like, oh no, like,
yeah,
this is not good. And then after that, he was like, all right, well, I kind of screwed this one. I would love to take you to a concert. And they went to a concert like the next week or something. And it was just great. Mm. And that was the beginning of the rest for them, which was awesome at this point. So Shanann was also, beyond all of the loveliness developing with Chris, she was also struggling with her health pretty badly, actually. And she had to go through a lot of tests and appointments and all of this, but she did find out that she had lupus.
Oh no.
Which, if you asked House MD, of course it fucking was. But if you ask anybody else in the world, they're gonna say that is like a very rare, lifelong autoimmune disease that is terrible. It attacks your body from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps very responsible, but perhaps a little bit hoping to be in denial, Shanann got multiple opinions. And it wasn't just like a second opinion. I think she had more than a few.
Yeah.
But everybody found the same thing. And lupus it was. Now, lupus, again, because it is lifelong and it's autoimmune, it has flare-ups. Sometimes you're doing better. Sometimes it's worse. Sometimes it attacks enough of an organ that you need a new one, or that one stops functioning. And so this is not like a light, oh, haha, she has this for a couple of months and it goes away. Like, this is a forever thing that she's now dealing with.
Right.
During these first 2 years, Chris was by her side. Almost immediately after dating, he took her to a colonoscopy and waited there with her. He loved helping her take her meds. Like, he would like organize everything that she needed in the morning and bring it to her. Like, he just really enjoyed doting on her and caring for her. But the thing that really convinced Shanann, she says, was they went to a beach day one day, the two of them, and he let her fall asleep on him for like 3 hours, and he had to pee the whole time. Like, the whole time. And he was like, I wouldn't wake her up. Like, she was asleep. I can hold it. Like,
how is a man that's capable of those sweet little moments capable of what he was ultimately capable of? It's just how scary it is to think that those little intimate, private, sweet moments that you would feel so safe, right? And because he didn't have to when he chose to.
And I think that's the thing. I think for a lot of people, when they don't have to, they choose to. And the second they feel like they have to, they go berserk.
Maybe that's what it is.
But it's heartbreaking because the beginning of this is just adorable. Like, it is a literal rom-com.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
And so, although Shanann was the notably ill one in her relationship, as lupus is, she was not passive at all. She wasn't weak and ill and like fainting or anything like that. She had her way. Like, she knew what she wanted and she wanted to get there. She had a bold personality and she was very loving and incredibly loyal, but definitely had a touch of some control issues. But Shanann certainly had to grow into this version of herself. She also had chronic migraines as a child, so she was at a lot of doctor's appointments. She was kind of out of school a lot. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was any other reason that kids choose to be kids. But she was not popular, and she was made fun of quite often. She had an older brother, Frankie. Her dad's name is Frank. We'll get to him later. But Frankie is her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to, like, stand up for her on the bus. Like, they'd get on together, and he'd be like, leave her alone, which I think is adorable.
Yeah, what a brother should do.
So Shanann had a difficult time fitting in, but eventually found solace in a teacher at high school and the drama club. Shanann became a stagehand, helping with set up and staging scenes, and eventually even became some kind of like student manager or director for behind the scenes, which is awesome. Her friends and her teachers remember her being the kindest person they'd ever met, including a time when one of her friends or fellow like castmates or something spilled something on their pants in the crotch area. And I think it was like a drink. It might have been like a red juice on white pants kind of thing. Like your 16-year-old social nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
And she immediately broke the awkwardness for this friend by like putting water on her pants in the same area until everybody was doing it and giggling.
Oh,
which is like adorable.
That is just the sweetest thing.
She'd like go out and get little milkshakes or coffees for some of her castmates when she was working on plays. And like, she just sounds like the most caring and kind person.
Yeah.
As for that high school teacher that she got close with, I believe it was her English teacher, but she really opened up to him. She talked about struggles at school, what she was going through medically or perhaps mentally, and even some things about home. And while I think this might have been probably more than most student-teacher relationships, they did try to get her to talk to a guidance counselor, and she was like, I just don't trust them the same way. And yeah. It doesn't seem like anything bad happened there, just that they were very close. And she was allowed to continue to talk to him. So like whatever they looked into seemed fine. But I will say this is the only instance of this kind of behavior from her that's documented anywhere. And hear you me, everything both of these people have done is now for some reason documented everywhere. But in high school, she did tell this teacher that her parents were going through a particularly nasty divorce. And this is not true. Her parents are still together, I believe, even to today.
Okay.
So maybe a little bit attention seeking as a teenager, but there's no other instance. This is not like a habitual thing she got into. There's nothing else that says she was known to do this or that people didn't trust her. It was actually the opposite. They were like, she has a bold personality, but she is the most loving and loyal person you'll ever meet.
I also think that when you're a teenager too, everything feels so much more intense. Everything feels so much more extreme. So say her parents were fighting a lot.
Right.
She could have just been mentally prepping herself. Maybe she overheard a conversation where it was like, we can't do this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there are reasons where I think maybe she's not lying, but maybe jumping the gun.
Yeah.
And saying my parents are going through this divorce versus they were talking about divorce.
Right.
And just kind of, you know, everything feels so real and so extreme and so the worst case scenario.
And I think that's totally possible. I think, you know, again, everything I talk about in this series, everybody who has been here knows this. Anybody who's new, welcome. I like to call myself an armchair psychologist. I am educated, but not licensed. I could not diagnose anybody, even if I was licensed, because I never met them. And that's not how that works. So anything I'm saying here is just sort of musings, but it does seem like she maybe has a touch of OCD or some just general anxiety around control of situations. And that's fine. That makes sense to me. I mean, given her childhood and not having a lot of that social acceptance and probably feeling very at the will of how everybody else wanted her life to be, as many teenagers do.
Also at the will of the condition that she had, which is a lifelong thing.
Right. Well, she didn't get diagnosed with lupus until later.
Well, right. But if she
as
feels
a kid,
like,
she had migraines that were chronic.
No matter what, she feels like her body is betraying her.
Yes.
And that can be, you know, you can't control it. Oh, I have these plans. Well, I feel so ill now I can't do them.
What I can't control is exactly how the dishwasher is loaded or how I want my friends or partner to treat me, you know? So Chris, on the other hand, was a very passive partner. While she was the one with bold direction, knew what she wanted, where she wanted to go, Chris was the guy who loved somebody else directing the ship, which Shanann did pretty perfectly. She liked her way. And he was very happy and liked to help her way come true and happen.
Yeah.
But unlike Shanann's evolution into the person that she was when they met, Chris had always seemed to be the same. As a kid, he was incredibly close with his father, Ronnie. Chris got into cars, mechanics, and racing really young with major dreams of working for NASCAR.
Okay.
He was quiet, introverted, and essentially very passionate and driven, pun intended, for this car career mechanics. I don't know if he wanted to be a driver or like a quick mechanic for when they do their pit stops or anything, but he was enamored with it. But Chris didn't have an easy time socially. He struggled to fit in and to make friends and even talk to any girls, which there were a lot of girls that liked him, according to like teachers and stuff, and he just didn't know how to interact.
He is a very attractive man.
Yes, he is. And while Chris was relatively average as a student in other areas, as you may now suspect, he was great at mechanics. Like, he really excelled. His passion and focus led his high school mechanics teacher to say that she was actually pretty convinced Chris was autistic, given his struggles socially and his very niche and intense passion for his interest.
Mm-hmm.
Chris was also asked in high school to compete in a competition with other, like, I think high school mechanics groups or whatever, but he was the one person chosen from his school to compete in this, which I think, if nothing else, just says the level of dedication and work he was willing to put in.
Oh, yeah.
But beyond his social life, Chris still struggled. He was always regarded as a good kid or a good man later, but he was really close with his father, even up until he left for college, and I believe after as well. But at college, he remained the same old Chris, quiet, intense, focused on his NASCAR ideals. Unfortunately, though, when Chris left to go to college, his dad, Ronnie, had an incredibly difficult time.
Hmm.
They were like best friends. They were attached at the hip until he had to leave. And once he did, Ronnie was not doing well with the transition and actually ended up finding himself addicted to cocaine.
That's an awful lot of pressure to put on your son.
Yes. I will say, I think I do a really good job of trying to see Chris's parents' point of view, but they are a pretty intense addition to all of the dynamics that come into play here. But even with this, stripped a lot of the family's funds and also got so bad that his nose was like constantly bleeding and the whole family was concerned, to the point where Chris and his sister Jamie had to come home and like help stage an intervention for him.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But to his credit, Ronnie did quit cold turkey that same day. He was like, this is enough. Like, I'm waking up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot for any kid to go through.
Of course.
Even as a very fresh young adult. You know? So while Chris was incredibly close to his parents, it became apparent in these first 2 years of dating Shanann that Chris's family did not intend to be very close with her.
Okay.
When they first started dating, Shanann had been working hard, like hard as hell, managing multiple stores. She was even selling like beepers and cell phones, which at this time, blowing up. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Good for her. But because of this, she was able to build the house of her dreams at a little over $300,000 on her own.
Wow. So remember, she built the house they lived in.
Yep. And she was 25, 26. Like, she's a young woman.
You go, girl.
So she did fill it and furnished it to the max. And her brother Frankie even estimated at this time that she was making like $500,000 a year.
Jeez.
Because she was working nonstop and she was good at it, you know?
Good for her.
So when time came and I guess Chris's family maybe came over, I don't know if it was a house welcoming. I don't know if they had just moved in or what.
Mm-hmm.
But they came over and they were like, I'm a little suspicious. Like, how is she affording this? How is she affording this and all of the fancy furniture in here? Like, this is well furnished. It's filled. It's decked. And it's beautiful and giant.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it seems from all reports that that's what started to sever a bond that hadn't even yet begun between Shanann and Chris's family.
So it seems like they're either suspicious or they're envious.
Yes.
About what she's been able to accomplish.
Yes.
That's not good.
No. And the thing is, there's a couple of things later on that I see from their point of view. Like, I get being like, I don't like this. But none of it ever seems to really rise to the reactions that it feels like everybody gets. And I don't know if that's just been the pressure and time cooker of the length of their relationship and the various strains that it's had since the start. But it does always shock me a little bit. I'm like, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so at this point, they're not married, right?
No.
So she's independently doing this.
Yes. This is not on Chris's dime. this is, in fact, I think she was doing a lot better than Chris at this time because he was either just ending school or just starting work outside of school. Mm-hmm. And he was still living with his parents paying for a lot of his bills.
I would understand it if they thought that maybe she were taking advantage of him.
Right.
And it doesn't seem that he's taking advantage of her.
No.
But that she's independently wealthy and hardworking. I mean, that's something you should want.
Right.
You know, you'd want your son to have a partner who can...
who has a work ethic and dreams and goals and will work to make those happen. So it was just really, it's an interesting kind of rocky start for them. But soon thereafter, Shanann's lupus progressively got worse. In fact, it was in one of the worst flare-ups I think she ever had, leading her to have to quit her jobs because she just couldn't keep up.
Oh, poor thing.
I mean, I hope she took some time off in between this and her next job, but it doesn't seem very Shanann to me for that to be the case. But she actually started working a new job at, kind of a MLM called Thrive.
Okay.
Or it might have been called Lavelle, and she was working for it, the Thrive portion specifically. That was unclear. I heard both of those, but I do believe they are like the same organization or clump. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But she started working, I'm going to call it Thrive, at Thrive. And this was seemingly about weight loss and health. Whatever kind of health it could help with. So it seemed like a product that they were selling, like a patch or whatever, that either was supposed to help with antibiotics or burning calories or targeting fat or something like that. That is a very common sort of pyramid scheme situation.
Right.
And Shanann had just the right personality to be in this position. Like, let me tell you, she was bold, she was happy, she was inviting, she was welcoming, and she was very assertive. So it got people to sign up under her. It got people to want what she had. It got people to want to be like her. So she did phenomenally. She raised a couple of ranks, and she actually even got like a cover of a magazine from the organization at one point because she did so well. She is the one in a million that gets the car, you know, and she did actually literally get a car.
Oh, my goodness.
So she is doing the damn thing.
Is this still in North Carolina or have they relocated?
This is still in North Carolina for the time.
Okay.
And so due to this, her life became increasingly, persistently, and constantly documented online. It was a lot of Facebook. It was a lot of videos of look at what we're doing today. Here's what the promo is. Like, here's what's going on. Let's talk about dinner.
Sounds like the influencer blueprint.
Yes, it literally is.
Where it's showing parts of your life, the, you know, obviously you take the highlight reel.
Yes.
And it's very talk heavy.
Yep.
Plugging this and that. I mean, people make a living doing that. I mean, we see that more now than ever, but it sounds like that was sort of the start of it, of finding a way to use social media to work for you.
This being, you know, sort of the early days of Facebook and the early days of being able to create content for other people to sell a product or to sort of sell a lifestyle promise through a product, right?
Right.
And so it was a lot of like, hop on, hey, this is how we're doing, this is the company stuff, this is our promos. Also, how lucky am I to have Chris?
Right.
And like, that was truly, like, it was adorable. You really, I think some of her videos are still up. I know you can certainly find videos of the videos, you know, or copies. But I do believe her Facebook is still very open for people to see. You get to know this family so well. You feel like you know all of them individually.
I think that was one of the things about this case that really set it apart. I remember 5 or 6 years ago watching something, and there was just this portion of her life that was so available and that seemed so raw and real.
Yeah.
That in so many of these cases that we talk about, especially ones from longer ago, you just don't have that. That it's almost easy to forget about them as people because we're kind of an out of sight, out of mind species at this point.
Yeah.
But to be able to look at those babies and to see her and just how she talked and her mannerisms and the way that she spoke and how good of a mom she was and how happy their family seemed, it just, it put everything in such perspective that it's one of those cases, it's one of the few ones that you can really see so much of their life before everything rather than hearing about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I do think there's a lot of times that major crimes like this happen. And, you know, we're not quite meeting all of the players here quite yet. They'll still come up before the end of the episode. But a lot of times you do hear about it after, and you might see a lot of someone's life, whether it is the offender or a survived victim or someone who is close with them who can say, like, here's all of our pictures and videos.
Right.
But it's not the same as them posting things themselves of themselves interacting with each other. And that really is a major point here. So her life is not to be, I don't know, maybe super Gen Z of me, which is fine. I'm a millennial, but like, it's not that she was chronically online because she had nothing else to do, but she was chronically online because that was her job.
Right.
And it also meant you got to see everything. Mm-hmm. You had this unchecked access that I think people, like creators and content, like influencers and content creators even now, don't put all of that out there because they've sort of seen, like, I want to build a boundary around this part of my business. But that was not the case in 2010 with the first, what? It was like 2-3 years of Facebook in existence, you know?
Yeah. And she kind of, imagine if she were still around today.
Oh, she,
what it could have grown to, you know what I mean? How she, if she chose to, if she wanted to.
She'd be a CEO boss bitch, I have no doubt.
But those, the, you know, I forget that that's how early this all started in this buildup, because you can see pictures of them and the videos of them and the way they talk. And then you see in the background, like, the style and the technology that everyone has, like, it starts to feel dated, and it's just sad to think that, yeah, we still keep going and they can't.
Never get to.
You know, those babies didn't get to grow up, and they're just so precious.
So between all of this time and these 2 years, some more drama proceeded to happen between Shanann and Chris's family. Allegedly, and I'm putting in a really heavy dose of allegedly, either it was their first meeting or something shortly after that that sort of put a rift in between her and his family. And they report, which I'm sure in their perspective this is very accurate and happened, but they report that she made Chris stop talking to them, which I will just say, for someone who was connected at the hip with his dad, I think I'd be hard pressed to find someone who's willing to do that for any girlfriend, let alone a pretty new one.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what their perspective is. So that's what they say. I don't know what happened outside of that, but it kind of grew and got to a place that when it came to them getting married, which they planned to do in late 2012, the only person in Chris's entire family to show up was his grandmother.
They just didn't go to the wedding?
Yes.
That's awful.
And so he actually shared his first dance with his grandmother, which is adorable, but also breaks my heart for him.
It's very precious, but he should have had the choice of all of the, you know, all the family should have been there, not just one.
Right.
And good for his grandmother for going, but my goodness.
But it has to feel isolating. Like, then you do feel like, and I think this is a theme throughout, nothing that ever rose enough to a conflict between Shanann and Chris's family ever was treated like a conflict that you could repair, like find a solution and repair, or compromise and repair. It was always like, well, now it's all or nothing. And I think that put Chris in a really weird spot, because even if it was Shanann being like, well, oh, I'm offended, I'm upset at this, then it's like, do I make my spouse happy or do I make my family happy? And then his family would be like, well, she was mad about this, so we're mad at her. And now he's like, okay, well, now I have to defend my wife, but I also have to defend my family, and I have to protect my wife, and I also have to protect my family. And how are we at this big of an impasse here, you know?
What a tough situation to be put in.
And he didn't seem to be very stressed. It just seems like a really weird dynamic. He seemed very chill about it all. That's kind of his whole thing. Like,
so either he was still secretly talking to them behind her back, if it were really her that didn't want him to speak with them, or he's able to compartmentalize so well and just remove them from his life, both are kind of concerning.
Yeah.
In hindsight.
In different ways, right.
So they've dated from 2010 to 2012. They get married in 2012.
Yes, they get married in November of 2012. And sometime around their wedding, I believe it was shortly after, Shanann and Chris went to an event in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was at a point in Shanann's lupus where it was fluctuating and she was struggling a lot with the symptoms. And either she met a new friend out there or she had a friend that she reconnected with out there that was a nurse,
mm-hmm.
but knew a lot about lupus and was able to tell her something that it's either the elevation or the climate in Colorado was really beneficial for people with lupus. Like it made a lot of their symptoms sort of alleviate. And after they went out there and enjoyed it and Shanann found that she really did feel a little better out there, they talked about it. And the two eventually then moved to Colorado shortly after. And they tried to do it pretty quick. So what they ended up doing was they had Chris go out there and live out there for like a couple of months to get a job. He lived with a family or some friends that they knew while he was doing that. So he was really just like banking all the money he could get while he was working out there for them to buy a house. And Shanann was selling her house. So that's why she had to stay behind. She had to like put on the market and do all the things.
Makes sense.
But when Chris told his parents, they were devastated. And they believed thoroughly that this was Shanann taking Chris away from them deliberately. And have said since early, like very early on, that they felt Shanann was controlling and narcissistic and Chris was suffering through it. Which I again want to point out, everybody who has known anything about this couple has said anything they can to say, well, this is what we saw or this is what we thought. Not one person who knew him and her before everything that happened, and honestly, even after, said that he ever looked unhappy or unwilling to sort of go with the flow she wanted to set.
Also, couple things.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't always the case, but sometimes parents have a, you know, the rose-colored glasses on about their own child, and
yes,
any miscommunication or disconnect must be the partner because it can't possibly be my child assessing our treatment of them. It also seems like they've put this unfair pressure on him. And also if he's now married with a wife, he has his family now. You know, it's, and not that you forget about your parents at all, of course not, but
your priorities shift a little bit.
They should, and they should want that for him. They should want him to go take care of your family. Move where you need to move. Do what you need to do. We'll be fine. I just think that's such an unhealthy pressure to put on it on your adult son.
I also feel like they had every right and ability of their own to move to Colorado if they wanted to. You don't have to be far. But she has a literal lifelong, potentially fatal in some cases, autoimmune disease that feels better there. So if you care about the other person, which most of the time you do when you marry them, you're going to want to take care of them and say, oh, if you feel better here, let's be here.
Yeah. And Colorado's beautiful. It's blast.
It's gorgeous.
Go have fun. And she also left her own family too, right? Because they're also in North Carolina. So it's not like she's, you know,
it's not stealing him to go home.
Yeah. Whisking him away to keep him away from them. It, like they're both going out alone, but they're going to plant their roots.
Yeah. So it was a lot. And eventually she came out, she joined him, and his parents were just kind of cranky. I have no idea how her parents felt. They never seemed to have a bad word to say about her or Chris up until the end, you know?
Yep.
But again, friends said they were a great pair because while Shanann had some of her own control needs, Chris was seemingly happy and enjoyed this dynamic, and their marriage blossomed into a family out there. They did eventually get a house. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I do think at this time they started having some debt rack up, which I think typically happens when you buy a house. Like, I don't know if they were able to make money or lost money on the selling and buying process. But even after that, like, I know Shanann just wanted to get out there. So she left a bunch of the furniture and stuff for the next people that moved in. And I'm sure they had to buy some of that. Like, they had to get settled, which takes some money.
Right.
But They had a beautiful home, and then very shortly, they created a very beautiful family. So just 13 short months after they got married, Chris and Shanann gave birth to their first daughter, Bella Marie Watts, in December of 2013.
Yeah.
Bella, by the way, I just find this so endearing. Her first name is because it's beautiful in Italian. And Marie was, I believe, a family name on Shanann's side, which I just find adorable.
Yeah.
She's also just the cutest thing you've ever seen. And her baby shower was actually held on the couple's first anniversary. So on in November of 2013, they had their baby shower for her, and they had like a little picture of the two of them. But it was just like, oh, look at this little life that we're making. Like,
a lot can change in a year.
Sure can. And it did.
Bella is also the one when she's slightly older, obviously, yes, the first one. But I always would see their photos and the way that the kids interacted, and Bella looks just like Chris.
Yes.
And their other daughter, Celeste, Cece, would, like, to me, always looked like Shanann. And so it was like they each had their, like, mini-me, yeah, kind of. But I just thought Bella looked just like Chris. Like,
and it was really funny because she really did.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris always said that Cece, who looked more like Shanann, acted so much more like him.
Yep.
And vice versa, Bella acted so much like Shanann but looked like
it's
him.
It's just so sweet.
It's so sweet.
I love genetics. I love just like seeing different traits pop up in families and just how sweet it is that somebody loved somebody that had, yeah, that, and then it gets passed down, and it's very precious. And outside of what happens here, it's very beautiful, but it's just awful.
This is a very heartwarming setup to a really devastating tale, I have to be honest.
Yes.
But as we just said, they did have a second daughter, Celeste Catherine Watts, who they called Cece, and she was born in July of 2015.
Yeah.
So like a year and a half apart. Perfect. Like adorable. Mm-hmm. Great ages. As Shanann's work continued to take off and her Facebook presence was growing, the kids and Chris became regulars on her accounts and her lives, displaying their seemingly happy life and great relationship. These videos show beautiful shots of their family, Bella and Cece singing songs, one of which was one that Bella memorized for Father's Day that she called "Daddy, You're My Hero." And she sang about all the things that he did that made her feel safe or seen or loved, like tying her shoes and like getting her lunch.
She wrote a song for him
and memorized it and sang it in her car seat on a video on Facebook.
Oh, that is just precious.
Adorable. And there's like little videos of them. And, you know, Shanann's like, say hi, Bella. And she goes, hi, Bella. And she goes, no, say hi. Like,
oh,
hi. And it's just adorable. And you get such an active sense of these two sweet children from all these videos. And it's just literal like heart warmth. It's so heartwarming. And there's even videos of Chris watching like princess movies with the girls and giving them piggyback rides and making them little snacks, and how him and Shanann interact. And she's like, well, I'm cooking all the dinner. And he goes, yeah, it'll taste better if you cook it. And she's like, but this guy's doing all the dishes.
Like, yeah.
And it's just cute. Like, it's a very sweet home dynamic from what you can tell. Mm-hmm. And again, it is the highlights reel. But it's all the time that she's posting. So it does get a very real sense of like, this is kind of the reg for us. Like, this is just our day to day.
Yeah.
So as Shanann posted more, she got more interaction. And the more interaction she got, the more followers she got. And the more followers she got, or friends, or whatever it is on Facebook at the time, ended up also being a great pool to be workers for Thrive, this company she's working for. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Thrive sounds like it was a weight loss patch or some body patches that were supposed to help with any slew of health issues. Something we haven't talked about yet, and in my personal opinion, I have not actually seen anyone else talk about this, which I think is wild, but I think there's a lot of influence that we see from weight as a part of this marriage and this relationship. And I mean, like, trigger warning here, like body weight numbers, how you see yourself, how you think your spouse sees you.
Mm-hmm.
When they got married, Shanann was still in a very tough spot with her lupus, and she had lost a significant amount of weight. to the point where she was like underweight, kind of.
Yeah.
And Chris was like, I don't know, he didn't look fat or unhealthy. He was just a little bit bigger than what later appeared to be his preferred size. And next to her, I'm sure looked bigger than he was because she's sick and underweight.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a happy, healthy man who's a little bit overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And like truly a little bit. So as Shanann worked on Thrive, she took it and so did Chris, actually. Shanann got healthy and she got back to a normal weight and then started Thrive. And while she and Chris were both using Thrive patches to assist in weight loss, Chris went ham. So I want to make sure we can agree on something. You should always do your research behind any marketing like this, right? Like, this one patch will get you the body of your dreams.
Yeah.
And while I find a lot of the times those claims and promises and what they're selling you is false, Thrive actually seemed to do something.
Okay.
But Chris wasn't using one. He was using two every day.
Okay.
I don't know if that's overdosing on things. I don't know what's in it. So like, I couldn't tell you what's helping with anything. But
unhealthy, let's say.
But certainly going above and beyond, you know. And Chris had never been a real gym head. Or like, I just don't think he thought about it that much. But then he started taking these, started losing weight, and he started working out daily. He was using his Thrive patches, and he went from something like 240 pounds to 180.
Okay.
That's like six. That's like a third of his body weight. That's wow. Huge.
Yeah.
It's staggering weight loss, but added in with his weightlifting, it actually made a huge transformation. So it wasn't just like you're going from a bigger body to a smaller body. He's going from a bigger body to a jacked body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has traps. He has, in my opinion, the kind of traps that look like a really skinny person, like chiseling themselves away from an actual sized human. You know how that looks sometimes when it's like a trap on trap?
Yup. Yeah.
But as this was going on, Shanann found out that she was pregnant again, which is such a blessing. But that brings you natural weight gain while you build a whole ass human in your body. Mm-hmm. But she was also no longer allowed to take Thrive while she was pregnant.
Now, is this with Celeste?
No.
Okay.
This is with their third baby.
Okay.
But at this point, Chris was still going through this whole body transformation, which usually affects mental health, sometimes positively, sometimes negatively. But he was really into it. And Shanann, I think, started getting maybe a little insecure about having gained back some natural weight, getting pregnant, gaining normal pregnancy weight, and then not being able to take the thing to lose it.
Yeah.
But she was still ecstatic about their upcoming baby. She was so pumped. And one sweet moment that was captured on Shanann's live was her giving Chris the news that she was pregnant with their third. It had been noted in a few places that she only wanted three kids, and she was hoping for Chris, and also because they already had two beautiful baby girls, that she wanted a boy.
Mm-hmm.
When she told Chris on video, she had a shirt on that said, "Whoops, we did it again."
Oh,
and he came in and he looked kind of confused. And then he noticed, I think, or he like came in for a hug and she gave him the pregnancy test that was positive. And I just think this is sweet and very like husband of it all. He came away and the cap on the pregnancy stick was pink. And he was like, "Is pink for girl? Are we having another girl?" And she was like, "I don't know. I just know it's positive." But it was just really, it was cute and endearing. And Shanann was just so excited. I will say later on, she did find out at the doctor that it was a baby boy. And they had brainstormed some names, but we'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
So just a sweet moment and cute that I think it was like the one thing she really wanted for Chris. And also that she was like, "Well, we already have these beautiful daughters. Like, I'd love to experience to have like a son."
Yeah.
So it's so sweet that all of that ended up coming to fruition. But with all of the joy in their life, it's both natural and also admittedly a little surprising to hear that all wasn't perfect. Which, of course, no marriage is perfect. It's hard. Parenting is hard. Adulting is hard. And so is life. But also, with all of the beauty in their life, it's hard to believe that this could lead to significant snowballing issues in a marriage. Behind the scenes, it seemed like Chris never liked being on camera, although it has never been said that he brought this up with Shanann. Also, a lot of the times that you hear about it, I will say, it seems like a lot of those reports are from his parents, who said he looked like he was suffering through it but had his mouth shut, and that she was just kind of domineering. She was a little bit domineering, but he never appeared like there was no dark sunken eyes where you're like, poor guy.
Yeah.
You know, there. Mm-hmm. I will say there was one video that I didn't have all the context around that initially seemed kind of like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. And then I got more context and I was like, are you kidding? There's a picture of him dressed up as Santa for Christmas one year, or like a video. And she's like, Santa, where's your phone? Because she needed it to like record them or something, or to do some sort of effect on the recording while she was posting the live or something. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have the context of her wanting it to like post things, you're just like, why do you want his phone so fucking bad? And right. Then you get it and you're like, oh my God, it's for work. Okay.
Yeah.
Get the phone. But
now, is he working at this time as well?
Yes. He, when they moved out to Colorado, he got a job at Anadarko, which is a petroleum company or organization. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of work with petroleum and oil.
Yep.
So he'd go out and like deal with oil silos and things like that.
So is she the one making the majority of like their income? And so it's kind of, in other words, is the emphasis really that they really need to continue with this social media presence because of,
I don't know,
that income?
She was the primary breadwinner, but she did do a lot. And the way that she did that, like her entire method of that, mm-hmm, was through social media.
Right. Okay.
So I think it led to maybe weird feelings on work. And I don't know that for sure, but that's kind of the vibe I get. Like, he goes out, he works in person very hard every day. He's doing very manual labor a lot of the time. And yes, her job is at home. It's more flexible. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't really have an end time. The entire day is her work day.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to see, because I could see that being like, well, you get to stay home all day. And it's like, yeah, I get to stay home all day, but I also work all day.
Right.
So
very different kinds of jobs, maybe hard to understand the other.
Right. And I haven't seen anything, but that is a place that I could see maybe tripping them up a little bit from time to time. But other than that one video where he's like, it's in the garage, like, you're like, he seems fine. He seems happy. He's hanging out with the kids. He's having a good time. He's like, I'm glad she's cooking and not me. Like, mm-hmm, there doesn't appear to be any suffering, again, because now everything between them that anybody else knows is pretty much brought up to the public. I haven't heard anything else about this, so I'd be surprised if there was anything beyond, but you never know. And beyond any marital or interpersonal conflict, the two were struggling with other issues. With Shanann's lupus and the emergence of both kids having pretty severe allergies, one of them with like anaphylaxis to nuts.
Ooh.
I believe it was Cece.
Okay.
Yeah. To the point where like they had to go to the hospital, like her body was shutting down. It was a little bit slower than like instantaneous in the air dying kind of thing, but mm-hmm, it was very serious. And with all three of them having health issues going on, the family ended up racking up debts really quick. Surgeries were expensive, healthcare is expensive, and then on top of that, I will say, perhaps if the two of them have a downfall, it is money management, which is interesting because at the beginning, you don't really hear about any debt happening. Like, Shanann's really on top of it. She's doing a lot. But I think as they had kids, maybe the desire or ideal to give them the best of everything got the better of their bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And that plus a mortgage, plus car loans, plus now growing debt from health and spending meant that they're budget and their own family income, it got tighter and tighter. But I will say in 2015, it seems like was the worst of it, right after Cece was born or right around then, because they ended up filing for bankruptcy in 2015. So this started some other issues between the two. I do believe, obviously, bankruptcy is never a fun and easy and lighthearted time. But I think there was something that they talked about where Shanann was supposed to be in charge of handling the finances. Mm-hmm. Whether this was before the bankruptcy or after, that is unclear. So I don't know if that was something they came to after that fact or if it was that she didn't do that well enough and he didn't know. Mm-hmm. He says he doesn't know. He also says a lot of things. So I don't know.
Yeah, he just say a lot of shit.
So this started some issues. But however, while their bills were still high with car loans in their home, it sounded like they were really getting this part of their life together. And that was getting better by the time Shanann reported being pregnant with baby 3 in 2018.
Okay.
So, well, again, there were some concerns and some major issues that seemed to be resolving and a baby on the way. Spirits seemed to be high. Which makes the next part of this particularly hard and confusing to follow.
Okay.
So, in this episode, where I'm going to end us is what we knew the day after. And we don't know a lot of things yet that will come to light later. So I promise I'm not skipping them. But I want to start this with what investigators might have found out immediately upon arrival. Chris Watts, same man who gave a presentation on different types of relationship deterioration, including cheating, with his loving wife praising him on it, started to have a flirty work relationship with one of his coworkers. Nicole Kessinger, who went by Nikki. And I'm going to make this obvious because there is a Nicole later that's one of Shanann's best friends. These are two different people. Mm-hmm. Nikki went by Nikki in real life, but also we're just going to call her that for the sake of eliminating any confusion.
Yep.
So Nikki was a few years younger than Chris. She was 30 and he was 33 or 34. And she was one of the very few women that worked at Anadarko, this petroleum company.
Okay.
And it seemed like she was relatively new, but coworkers, not just Chris, coworkers in general would say like she'd wear a cute outfit and that would start quote unquote locker room talk between the men, which ideally isn't grabbing her anywhere. But certainly they were like, oh, she's hot. Like she has a great bod, you know? And they all could say that they definitely saw that Chris liked her. Like, he'd kind of smile at her if she was around and walking by. Like, he'd look at her, that kind of thing. But they didn't really interact much. They didn't have a lot of overlap in their day-to-day roles. And the only thing that started getting flirty was they talked once or something, and then they were emailing a little. And that sounded a little flirty. And in this email that he sent her, he was like, oh, you know, I think at this point even he mentioned to her and literally nobody else, including his wife, that he was in the process of getting a divorce from Shanann.
Okay.
And in their work emails, she said, well, you know, I think it's so hard to find a good family and to work on that. So I think our friendship should stay at work.
It's very 2010s to flirt via email, but that's an aside. So what year is this now?
So this is now 2018, while Shanann is pregnant with baby number 3.
Okay. And they've got a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old at this point?
Yeah. Just about 3, 4.5 kind of vibes.
Okay. So you've got 2 babies at home, 1 on the way.
A loving wife.
A loving, doting wife. And you're flirting with a girl from work who's younger than you.
Yes.
Who may or may not have been giving you eyes.
Yep.
That's all it took, huh? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So that starts, and from all accounts of their work emails, this is where they end it. They're like, okay, we'll have our friendship at work. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
From all accounts at work.
Okay.
That being said, they did soon begin texting off their phone numbers, by the way, their company phone numbers at least. And around this time in the summer of 2018, Shanann took Bella and Cece to North Carolina. She planned to go for 6 weeks, which is a significant portion of the summer.
That's a very long time.
And she wanted to bring the girls to visit both her parents and Chris's parents, like have big family time, and also to just sort of enjoy that. And because her work was a little more malleable, she could do it from really anywhere because it's all online, she was able to go. But because Chris's was much more in person, hard work during the day, he had to stay. And also, I don't know about you guys, but I don't know anybody whose job is like, here, you can have 6 weeks off in the middle of summer for nothing.
Mm-mm.
No, you're breaking into next year's, you know?
Like, yeah, that, yeah.
So,
especially all at once, an entire summer. I don't, unless you're a teacher and you have summers off, I don't know that that's, you're going to get summers off.
Yeah. So he had to stay back, and the plan was for her to go out for 6 weeks, and then he would stay home for five of those and join them for the last week.
Okay.
And during this trip, there was maybe a lot of chaos. They were planning to have Cece's birthday out there during this trip, and I believe that she was actually trying to stay with Chris's parents first to have the kids get more time with them, which I think is sweet.
Yeah.
But as an anxious, perhaps a little bit domineering wife and mother of two health risk children, she was pretty anxious about this. So she gave them like a list of food to get for the kids. And she was like, also, because the nut allergy is so severe, like, please don't have any nuts mm-hmm. out and about. Which brings us to something that is later referred to as Nutgate.
Nutgate
is going to be our Nutgate 1.0.
There's more than one Nutgate.
There sure is. We have at least two Nutgates in this case.
My goodness.
But Nutgate 1.0. So she gets to their house. They're hanging out. I think they were there for a couple of days. She did still end up doing her thing. She had a plan. She wanted to see it happen. She went and bought some food or whatever from a grocery store and brought it back so that they could have what she thought was appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I think is fine. She's spending her own money, you know. Yeah. Might feel a little bad to be like, I thought we prepped okay, but didn't seem like that was anything. What really got her was one afternoon they had just like a bowl of pistachios open and around. And she was like, can you not do that? Like, they're children. They don't even know what all the nuts are to stay away from them. Like,
yeah.
Can we please not do this?
When there's a life-threatening allergy and you just leave it out.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids aren't going to know that that's what that is.
Especially, like, not all nuts look the same. Some are peanuts. Some are pistachios that you have to crack open. So, you know, they don't have one single look that a kid could be like, oh, that's a nut. I should stay away from that. Yeah,
sometimes they're green and they taste bad.
Yeah.
Not a pistachio fan.
Exactly.
Teach their own.
So there's just a lot going on. And that, I think, already sort of amped up her anxiety. But also, then the next day, she gave one of them, and I believe Bella had allergies to something maybe that wasn't nuts, but she did have her own health issues that they were worried about.
Mm-hmm.
Chris's mom gave her a bowl of walnut ice cream, or like ice cream with walnuts in it.
Okay.
And right in front of Cece.
That's a problem.
Who was there.
She's going to want a bite because she's going to obviously want what her sister has.
Right. And so at this point, Shanann either walks in or finds out about it. And she is freaking pissed. She's like, that's my kid's life. And they're like, well, we didn't give it to Cece. We gave it to Bella. And she was like, okay, well, first of all, they're both kids. One of them shouldn't really have what the other one can't have because the other one's going to die if they have it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and I will say she was a little bit strong worded in this. She was like, you're trying to kill my kid. Like, my child can literally die from this. Do not have this out around them. That's the only thing I was like, please do not have at all. And the response, which I think is a fair response in most scenarios. I do think we should let parents determine how their children are going to be parented. But they were like, well, she has to learn that sometimes she can't have everything she wants.
You know, I just think that if you haven't seen your grandkids in like years potentially, and you want to have a good relationship with them, and you hopefully maybe want to have a good relationship with your daughter-in-law,
yeah,
the mother of those grandbabies, that within the first week you're not like, let's teach them a lesson.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's
here's a life lesson. If you eat the ice cream, you die.
Yeah, that's just, you know, there are other lessons I think kids definitely need to learn, like the word no and right. stuff like that, which seems to be lost in some generations. But then at the same time, you just don't gamble with that on like day three. And maybe she was domineering, but if there are things worth being domineering about, I get it being your children's health and potentially life-threatening allergies. That I understand. Yeah. That part I get.
And I will say, like, I want to emphasize here, none of what we're saying about Shanann being domineering is supposed to be a bad thing. I think it can present its own challenges. Everybody has those. But it doesn't seem like anyone in her immediate circle, her husband, never said anything if he felt anything negative about it to her. He was happy to go with the flow. I think he liked having somebody else taking the reins on a lot of things. But also, like, she grew into that. She said, I had a hard time. Here's what I can change and what I can fix. And I'm going to do that. And she felt better. And I think that's all anybody can do. And honestly, she was not. But even if she was the biggest bitch in the world, you don't deserve to have somebody else take your life for that.
No.
That's not fair. And I know you all know that this is where that's going because it's a huge case, but also, like, it's on a murder podcast. So you know that. But I just think it's wild that a lot of people use this as like, oh, she drove him to do it. And it's like, no, he was a full grown man. He can say no.
And your wife's pregnant with your baby, and she got pregnant one way and one way only.
Yep.
So you made that choice together.
Which I'm also actually really glad you brought up. Because in her reaction to this, it was big. She had a really big reaction. She felt really hurt. She felt like they were really not considerate or caring about her children's health or safety. And she basically was like, she told Chris to deal with it. She was like, talk to your parents. Like, they cannot threaten the health of our children.
And so he's not there, right?
No, he's still at home.
He's in Colorado. She's in North Carolina. She's staying with them, and there's already a problem, and it's been a few days.
I think after this, she immediately went to stay with her parents.
Yeah, I get that.
Which I get. Now, the thing that I think she did maybe take a little bit over the top was she is very present on Facebook. And she did post about it quite a lot. And she was like, ugh, trying to feed nuts to my nut allergy child. Like,
oh, no.
So she's doing that. And his parents, there's obviously already some like rocky ground going on between there. They're taking it as like a very personal attack every time she did it. Maybe it was. I don't know. But it got to the point where they didn't even go to Cece's birthday party, which was like the next week. And allegedly, Chris's dad was going to go, but Shanann posted something that morning on Facebook. And he was like, that's it, I'm not going.
So as you've been talking, I did some Reddit sleuthing.
Yes.
Just about some of the texts, because I remember, I don't know every detail of this case. I at one point knew more, and my brain is mush, so I don't remember. But I remember the texts being a big piece of this.
It is huge.
I read a text between Shanann and Chris, and her just being like, I didn't make him do that. He did that. You know, so they're like fighting over the fact that the dad did not go to the birthday party.
Right.
And, you know, like he owes his granddaughter an apology kind of thing of showing up.
I think it's totally fair. You know, like that is your grandbaby. It's your child. You're bringing them to hang out and make memories and have a good time with their grandparents who they don't get to see all the time. You're taking weeks to sort of disrupt your life. She's not seeing her husband for any of this time. She's not at home for any of this. She's traveling and working.
And throwing a birthday party.
Throwing a birthday party and trying to like have time with them, trying to allow them to have good time, trying to supervise and monitor that her kids are safe. And also, the other thing, well, again, I believe she could have handled it in some ways better. I want to remind everyone that she is fucking pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what happens with pregnant women? They don't have no hormones and get totally chill about everything. You know?
Like, yeah.
And that's not to say everybody goes crazy over everything, but like you have an insane amount of hormones that you don't have in your body normally. She's already anxious about health. Because she has such bad health. She's dealing with lupus and a pregnancy. And she's around people that she doesn't have a very good trust foundation with that have now just tried to put her kids around something that could kill one of them twice in like 24 hours, and then they decide not to show up. And do I understand where if you're sort of taking things personally, you already don't have a great relationship, that the Facebook post or whatever could feel like bigger digs or a bigger deal than they are? Absolutely.
I have a problem with the Facebook post.
Yeah.
I get completely where she's coming from with all of it about, you know, it's kind of like I asked for one thing.
Yes.
You know, and maybe she did or didn't ask for just one thing, but I feel like a severe allergy to a baby. I mean, you're talking about like a little 3-year-old.
Yeah.
A little 4-year-old.
Hobbling around.
They're putting their hands on everything. Hands go in their mouth like that. That's in their eyes. I mean, whatever they really feel like doing. And they've got a lot to say, and they're slapping everything, and they're into, they're precious and beautiful and everything, but they're also like messy and going to get into everything. Yeah. And you do kind of have to baby proof it. And I get her frustration with that, but I also would understand his family's frustration. And maybe this is just because I'm not a social media person.
Yeah.
I don't have a big presence on anything. I don't do the Facebook thing. I don't, you know, I have a distrust of a lot of social media because I've said I've been like hacked a million times, and I'm like, I don't trust that everyone, like, it's not real life. I don't think that real people are like posting a lot. Like, I think that people are either put way too much of their real life out there, or everything is fake, and I just, it's not real life. Sometimes we need to like put the phones down and go touch grass.
Yeah.
And I could understand if it's something private within the family, that there's a disagreement, that maybe you don't want that aired to potentially hundreds of people.
Right.
That could feel like a bigger dig because now you're taking it outside of the house, and now it is, you know, you're looking for other people's commentary or people to, I guess, what are you searching for in that?
I think my take on her with the Facebook, I don't think it was cool solely because it was as much a personal account as a business account. And to that point, you're not just reaching people that you trust, like your close friends, your close family. You're reaching every potential buyer of your product. You're putting it out to more than just the people you've vetted to be okay. And even at then, like, yes, it could feel a little bit violating for all of these people to know, but at least it would be people that she knows and trusts and feels okay with, but versus like, here's everybody.
Yeah, but if you're his dad, you don't give a shit about her business or that she's reaching other people, other potential buyers. You care about the fact that we've had an issue and now you have brought it to like the world, basically. Anybody who wants to click in and cast an opinion on it. And I could see that being kind of like a sting and being absolutely frustrated with that. And
yeah,
I mean, you have to care about other people's opinions, I guess, but you know, half of them are going to be guests at the party. I can understand why you're like, I don't even want to deal with that. I'll see my grandkid on a different day and celebrate.
Right.
So I can kind of get that just because I'm a very like deal with it privately person, and deal with it in person, like on face to face. I want you to use words, not texting. And she could tell everybody that she wanted to tell in a different way.
Yeah.
I think.
I think she could have. And I do think that was over the line, but I don't think it was so far over the line with everything she was dealing with that I think it warranted like this big of a response. I understand having a response. I understand not liking it or wishing she went about it a different way. But I also think if you consider just the amount of adrenaline she probably had thinking one of her kids might have to go to the emergency room for anaphylaxis while having pregnancy hormones, while traveling, being away from home, and trying to, in my opinion, I saw a lot of this as kind of like a bridge, like trying to repair, to say like, I want you to have a good relationship with my kids. I want this to be a good thing. I think the Facebook was a lot. I also think their reaction was a lot.
Yeah.
And not invalid, just a lot. Like,
yeah, I mean, and I also think that this is one of those things that shows that she isn't perfect, and that's very human, and that we don't put victims on this pedestal, like this unreachable pedestal, and falling short of that is just, well, you deserved it by any means. Right. I mean, these are just real things. They've obviously had financial troubles. They're trying to take some time He can't get that time off. She wants to visit family and be with family. This is just putting more of a strain on their marriage now, bringing his family back into it, who mm-hmm. already don't like her and who already don't hesitate to tell him that.
Yes.
And he also, now that's not only just his wife now, that is also the mother of his children.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of rich based on where this is heading, but there is a weight and respect that that should have regardless.
Should. Yeah.
Yeah. Operative word being should. That his family bad-mouthing her or just adding fuel to what is already a contentious time in their relationship, even if they're not advertising it, is it just, it's all just another piece of this web.
Yeah. And I also think too, like, I think about how, and I will say this, they are very doting parents. They are on Chris's side 100% no matter what's going on, which is in a lot of ways helpful for kids, sometimes to their detriment, but like a very good quality to have in a parent. That being said, I do think it's interesting to me that they could feel that strongly and understand that about their own child and not sort of, if they did, they might have, I don't know.
Mm.
But it seems like they're not really extending that to how Shanann might be doing the same thing for her kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, this is my baby. I will be protecting my baby.
And while your child's always your kid, even if they're a grown adult,
yeah.
he's also a grown adult and father of two. So yes. I think that there's a bit of like, let's, you know, cut that out a little bit. Like, don't infantilize him.
Please.
But, you know?
Yeah. So this time period, obviously on top of this conflict, was already kind of tumultuous for the two. Shanann was starting to feel neglected. Typical Chris was doting and he called or texted, but this time he was strange and kind of distant and he kept pulling away. He didn't really text, which was unlike him, but really unlike him was that he wasn't even calling to talk to Bella or Cece for a few days. So she had to be like, come here, girls, like, let's talk to dad. We'll call dad.
Yeah.
And that, it wasn't like him. Like, he was the guy that read two stories to each of them before bed. Mm-hmm. She was like, what is going on? And she could really feel it. And I do want to say, there's a lot of us girlies with anxiety. There's a lot of people who have been cheated on and have a lot of trauma from that. I don't think Shanann was cheated on from anything we know. But I think a lot of times when you have a gut feeling or you're getting anxious, it can be written off as like, oh, what? Like, you're just being over the top about it. But she was really feeling uncomfortable. She's like, something is wrong. Something has shifted.
Women also have this innate intuition.
Yes.
In us that we need to trust.
Yeah. And so she was like already a little anxious. She's already a little insecure about how she looks after this pregnancy or during this pregnancy while Chris is like literally getting buffer and buffer by the day. And she's also fearing that now she's pushing him away. Either he's not attracted to her or like this conflict is maybe making him want to reconsider things or something. And she's anxious and she's asking, she's like, what's going on? Is anything wrong? And he's denying everything. Mm-hmm. And anytime she gets mad, he's very much a yes man. So he's like, yep, I should do better. Yep, I'll do better. I'll call. Yep, this is my fault. But he doesn't really engage in any of it. It sounds like he's just kind of saying it to like keep the conversation going.
Well, that's usually out of either he's worn down or there's the he just doesn't want to hear it. It's yeah. easier to yes somebody to death than it is to have the tough conversation. Some people just want easy.
Yeah. And so as they're out there again, they're out there for 5 weeks without him. And then he comes up for the sixth week or out. I don't know what the directions are. I don't know geography. But when he did finally join them, she texted a friend that night that he came out, or like maybe the next morning. He had only kissed her once at the airport after arriving with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then didn't kiss her again for the rest of the night. He didn't like touch her. It was, I mean, not in a gross way in front of anybody, but like he wasn't like cuddling up to her on the couch. He was on a separate couch. And she's like, I'm literally just crying. Like, I just want my husband back. And now he's here and he's not even here.
And so, and it's already been, what, 5 weeks since yeah. they've seen each other. So it's a long time to be away.
She's hoping he'd miss her. She does send one text at one point where she's like, you'd think that you'd miss us because he wasn't calling at all, even for the kids.
Yeah.
So it was just weird. It's not like him. And now he's not even like touching her, being around her, giving her any of that physical support that a partner typically does. And then on top of it, that night, she tries to seduce him. I guess whatever their ritual is, if she's taking a nighttime shower, that means she wants it bad.
Okay.
And he knows it because that's like the thing. It's not like she's taking this shower every day. Mm-hmm. It means one thing for them. Mm-hmm. And she is trying to do that. It's been 5 weeks. She misses her husband. She's trying to reconnect. And he like rolls over and ignores her and goes to bed. Ugh. So now she's really upset. She's like, something is really wrong. Like, I really feel that something is wrong. And she talks to him. And at some point, I think this is after they get home, he kind of agrees. He's like, yeah, something's weird, but I don't really know what it is. He like won't tell her anything. But anytime she's like, well, I feel distant. Like, are you cheating on me? Like, we have never had a time in our entire marriage, and this is like 6 years now, mm-hmm. where we've had more than 5 weeks go by without being intimate, and you've never been distant like this before. So if you're not getting it from me, I feel like you're getting it from someone else. And he's like, no, like nothing. So after this, I think it was a pretty quick turnaround. She actually has to go back on a plane to go on like a work weekend trip for Thrive.
Okay.
So they all get home. He's at home with the kids and she goes out to this work event. It's not very long. I really think it's like a weekend. It might be a couple days longer than that, but mm-hmm. it's a work trip. It's never like more than 5 or 7 days, you know? And that even feels long, but she is there and she feels like shit.
Okay.
So
physically or mentally or both?
Both.
Okay.
So there's a couple of things that happened, right? After Chris told her that things were weird, but he wouldn't really tell her what was wrong or what she was doing or how she could help fix it. She gets them both books called Hold Me Tight.
Okay.
So she gets one and then she likes it so much. Like, I think she tried it out and found out that she liked it and got him one that was delivered while she was on this trip. And because she felt so poorly, I don't know if this is like sickness from the pregnancy. I don't know if it's a lupus flare up or a mix of both. Who knows? She is not feeling good. So she spends a lot of time in her hotel room, like a lot of time. And she's doing these exercises from this book. One of them is like, write your spouse a letter or something. So she's writing him these beautiful, heartfelt letters of like, I know it's a tough time, but I love you. I love our marriage. Like, I love the life we've built. I want to keep going with you and like find this beautiful life. And she's just like sitting there hoping he's doing these exercises too. Meanwhile, the package for him shows up and he throws it in the trash can. We have that on video, which is terrible. But she's going through all of this. And again, he's still being weird. He's still being distant. She's doing everything she can to work on this marriage. And we know that he's not even opening the fucking package with the book.
Yep. He's checked out. He's done.
He's so checked out. So she's there. She's feeling sick. And now she's also like, mentally so anxious and preoccupied with the distancing and like deterioration of her marriage, which again she can feel even if he's not saying it, that she's just like having a bad time. So she's pumped to get home,
right?
She is so excited. I think she flew home Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gets on the flight and she's texting him. She's like, oh my gosh, like I can't wait to come home. I'm so excited to be there with you. And then her flight gets delayed.
Oh.
Which is, honestly, I'm going to say it, it's fucked up.
That's the worst.
When you're sick and you feel like shit and then you have to fly and then you have to be at the airport for like multiple hours longer.
I know. And you don't want to catch a sickness, which is like the airport is a breeding ground for sickness.
Yeah, it's a petri dish. There's like no rules. In the airport, people aren't even wearing shoes. Like,
I know.
So she's already like, I can't wait to get home to you and like work on this and have some time at home with my family, rebuilding whatever we need to do. And I also miss my kids because I was just with them for 6 weeks straight and now I had to be without them for a little bit. And I miss my husband. Like, she's ready. And this flight gets delayed and she's texting me. She's like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so late. I'm not going to get home till like 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And he doesn't answer anything until she's in the air. And he's like, oh, damn, that's late.
Okay, so what's he doing?
Yeah, we'll get there. And she's like getting home. She's with her friend, Nicole. Nicole mm-hmm. Atkinson works with her at Thrive. And I don't know if they met through that. It sounded like they met long before that, but they were very close. Mm-hmm. They lived nearby. She would help Shanann sometimes with like her meds or her doctor's appointments, like if she needed a ride or something. So she was really in it with Shanann. I'm sure that was actually a comforting presence to have during all of this. But they drove together. They flew together. When they landed, they drove back to her house first. So Nicole dropped her off. And this was just about 3 a.m. She gets in on Sunday. And this is 3 a.m., technically probably Monday morning, going into Sunday. The one thing that they had talked about Sunday was that Monday was going to be the kids' first day, or I think it was Cece's first day of kindergarten.
Okay.
And so they were really excited. She's like, do you mind packing their bags? Like, if not, I can do it early in the morning, but that would be really helpful. And he was like, yeah, for sure. And so she gets home. She puts her little suitcase and her flip-flops by the door, and she goes and slips into bed. And she's just like, I just picture her yearning for connection with her spouse.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you know, kind of rolling around a little bit, and she turns over, and I don't know if she's like rubbing his back or something else, but like they ended up having sex. He woke up and they finally were intimate.
Mm-hmm.
After all of these weeks now, and she went back to bed, or he went back to bed. She went to bed for the first time.
Right.
But the next morning, the next thing we hear is from her best friend, Nicole. She came by the house in a panic. She had been texting Shanann all morning, calling, and hadn't heard a thing. And beyond that, as Shanann, again, was balancing pregnancy and her lupus, she had a lot of doctor's appointments, but she had one scheduled for that morning. And I don't know if Nicole was supposed to take her there or was just trying to check in after to see how it went, but not only was her phone off, so going directly to voicemail, which was never the case for Shanann, but she ended up calling the doctor's office and they confirmed that she never showed for her appointment. And Nicole was like, this is wrong.
Especially where she's like very consistently, regularly, reliably online.
Yes. Like her entire job is online.
Yeah.
A dead cell phone was not anything that Shanann fucked around with.
Mm-hmm.
And also, her health wasn't something she fucked around with. She has a baby growing in there. You take that pretty serious. And so Nicole is like bewildered at this point. She actually drives by the house with her son and her daughter. And she's like looking around. She's like peeking in. I think they had a door code to let them in and she knew the code. So she opened the door and then pushed it in. But there was a chain lock from the inside that was done. Like, you know how in hotel rooms sometimes they'll have that. So she could only open the door a couple inches. But when she saw the door, she like yelled out. She was trying to see if anybody was there. No response. She also saw what really started making her panic was that Shanann's shoes were still there and they were like the flip-flops she always wore. And also her suitcase was untouched. Not unpacked and not for nothing. Like, no hate, no tea, no shade. Could not be me. I'm jealous actually a little bit. But Shanann does not strike me as the kind of person who comes home from a trip and doesn't immediately unpack.
Yeah.
Maybe not 2 a.m. the morning she gets in.
But throughout the day.
But it's going to be unpacked the next day, you best believe. Like,
yeah.
So.
Wish I could relate to that.
I wish so bad I could relate to that.
But even if she's not the kind of person that has it all put away, you still need things in your bag.
Yeah, so you need a toothbrush.
It would still be opened. You know, you probably need to grab your toiletries or you need to grab something from inside, even
your phone charger.
That's not checking out to me.
So Nicole's getting freaked out. She goes around and the thing that really gets her is they must have had like a window into the garage or something, but she looked into the garage and saw that Shanann's car was there and so were both of the girls' car seats.
Okay.
And that's where we're gonna leave today.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I know. But you have something to look forward to.
After Thanksgiving?
Yes. So again, this is going to be a couple parts. So sorry. I am a believer in excessive detail.
First of all, never apologize for anything. Second of all, you can apologize for making me wait.
Well, I'm sorry and I won't be sorry.
Okay. Good answer. Good answer.
This is a fascinating one. It honestly, truly, if you haven't heard of it, it is beyond layered in so many ways. I am super excited to go over with you guys next week all of the chaos searching for Shanann, sort of the investigation that the police do into this, how all of this goes. And then in the last episode, I'd like to talk about things we've learned since then or haven't learned since then. And I also want to do my little armchair psychology and sort of break this down, because I feel like I've seen a few things, and I've seen more than a few videos at this point of like psychologists breaking down behavior that happens here. And so I can give you some of that information. But like, I feel like there's a couple things in this that play a big role that aren't really touched on a lot. And maybe they don't play as big of a role as I'm thinking, but I don't really hear them mentioned at all. And I think it is a big reason into this breakdown of this relationship. So I'm excited to talk about that with all of you, but I think that will probably be in part three.
Yes.
Yes. But if you wanted to see the people, the places, the things that we talked about today, you could do all of that on Instagram. You'd find us there. You can find that in our link tree if you haven't been there before. You can kill a couple hours on there. You can see everything we talk about, everyone we talk about, and also memes, funny relief memes to be like, ah, I need a reprieve from all of this chaos. And you can get a silly, goofy, wholesome laugh. You can get a relatable laugh. We usually have really funny things up on our Instagram story, usually involving cats.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that.
And we have lots of resources if anybody needs them, or if you have anybody in your life that might need them. And we also have a lot of information for causes and charities or supports that victims' families really emphasize, so that we have sort of a link for them to have their voice heard whenever possible. It's amazing. Kill an hour on there, maybe two, who knows. Allie does a great job.
Oh, thanks.
I don't touch Instagram unless I'm specifically asked to. And that's usually like, hey, someone had a question for you. And I'm like, okay.
Yes.
So everything on there, you can say thanks and give lots of nose boops to Allie. And other than that, if you wanted to send us an email, if you don't have Instagram, you can find that in our link tree. You could also find our PayPal and our Venmo if you wanted to fiscally support, so that we can continue to pay Adobe forever, over and over again, for the same service. And thank you, Adobe. We do love it. And if you wanted to see any stickers or merch that we have out now, you can look at Redbubble. And I think you guys have a long to-do list between now and next week.
I think you do.
But if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye, guys. And this is just the beginning. You're killing me, Smalls.